Hello, this is Michael Steve from Kaplan Financial, and today in this podcast I'm going to be talking about the emergency budget of the 22nd of June 2010. Well, he's been and gone and done it. Boy George has been transmogrified into George the Axeman and wielded a powerful blow to government spending and delivered a raft of tax changes of which only a few made the headlines. The headlines largely confirm the pundits' predictions. An increase of the standard rate of VAT and to CGT for higher rate taxpayers. The spending axe was delivered swiftly. Cuts to benefits and to public sector pay. And child benefit, the nation's favourite, to be frozen for 3 years. Mr. Osborne insists that this budget was fair, with richer people taking more pain than poorer people. And the Treasury estimates that an average household will be about £300 per year worse off by 2012-13. And with those households earning less than £14,200, they're going to be worse off by about £150. And people earning £50,000 a year, according to the Treasury estimates, are likely to be worse off by an amazing £1,600 per annum. So, how did he do that? Now, in this podcast, I'm going to be looking principally at the tax issues, but let's be aware that most of George Osborne's budget is about spending cuts. Now, we know roughly what's going to happen. Most government departments will be asked to slash their budgets by around 25 to 30%, and that's going to come up, and the details of that will be in the public spending review in the autumn. So there's a little bit of time to wait for those details. And that's 80% of the pain. There's one of those grand 80-20 rules at work here. But I'm going to be dealing with the other 20% of dealing with the problem, and that is from the tax. So let's start with personal allowances and national insurance. As expected, and with pressure from the Lib Dems, the personal allowance for those who are under 65 is going to be increased by £1,000 to £7,475 from April 2011. So for a basic rate taxpayer, that's going to save income tax of £200. But let's be clear about one thing. This is only available to basic rate taxpayers. So the basic rate limit, that's the limit at which we start to pay higher rate tax, and that's currently £37,400, this basic rate limit will be reduced so that higher rate taxpayers will not benefit. A higher rate taxpayers will continue, as far as I'm able to see on the information available so far, to continue to have a personal allowance of £6,475, at least up to the £100,000 limit that we're already aware of. So, frozen next year, as well as frozen this year. Now, the exact figure of the reduction of the basic rate limit, currently £37,400, will not be known until the autumn because these are somehow linked to the September RPI figures. But it does seem, I think, immediately obvious that if the basic rate limit, the top end of basic rate, is going to be reduced, then that's got to mean that there will be more taxpayers who fall into the higher rate band. So that's going to be more bad news there, and it's another example of fiscal drag. Now, as far as NICs are concerned, it looks as though, and this is one of the bits of the budget that didn't come across very clearly, it looks as though the increases that were announced by Alistair Darling to both the employers and the employees' NIC rates are still there. Now, that's quite surprising, given that the Tories were denouncing this as a tax on jobs. But there is a few crumbs there, a few crumbs from the table, by which the point at which employers start to pay Class 1 national insurance is to be increased by an extra £21 a week above inflation. So there's a little bit of good news for employment. And another announcement from the Chancellor. There's going to be a regional employer holiday for new businesses. This has been something on the cards for quite a while now, with small businesses in particular saying, this is a problem for us. Every time we want to try and expand, we've got to employ somebody. There's a huge cost to us, the business. So we, these small businesses, want some kind of assistance. And it looks as though Mr. Osborne has given them something. So this measure is designed to assist new businesses, and it's only set up in certain regions, which is why, of course, it's referred to as a regional employer holiday. And the regions that will not be able to benefit are predictably London, the South East, and East Anglia. It looks as though it's a 3-year holiday for the first £5,000 of employer Class 1 NICs due in the first 12 months of employment for each of the first 10 employees that are hired in the first year of business. Now, that's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? But the details we don't have yet. They're expected soon. And its implementation is expected sometime around September 2010. So there's a little bit of waiting in there while we find out what's actually going on. Right. I'd now like to turn to business tax, and I'll start with corporation tax. There are a number of changes to the main rate and indeed the small companies rate of corporation tax, and both of these are reductions and both will be welcomed by the business community. The main rate of corporation tax is of course paid by companies with profits above the upper limit, which is unchanged at £1.5 million. And we're going to have legislation in this second finance bill by which the main rate of corporation tax will be set at 27% on or after the 1st of April 2011. So that's fairly good news. And you'll be aware, of course, that big companies have long lobbied the Chancellor, saying that the UK is fairly dramatically unfair on corporation tax. And there are lots of countries that all the big companies could go to where they would pay much less corporation tax. You only need, of course, to look at the Republic of Ireland, just an hour's flying time away, where their corporation tax limit is substantially lower than what we've got in the UK. So that's the first thing. The main rate of CT is going to drop by 1 percentage point to 27. It also looks as though it's going to continue dropping, and their target rate is 24%. And we're hoping to achieve that by the 1st of April 2014. Now, not all big companies will be able to have that. Of course, the oil companies are still being bashed. Their corporation tax rate will remain at 30%. There's some good news too for many AAT companies. The small profits rate, that is the CT rate that's paid on profits below the lower limit of £300,000, will similarly see a drop. And that's going from 21% to 20%, again on the 1st of April 2011. Now, that's very good news for small companies. You'll be aware that Gordon Brown had placed a rising wedge of taxation with small companies with the, and of course, he'd been playing yo-yo too with it. Do you remember the infamous 0% rate, then the 10% rate, and then that rising wedge from 19 to 22? Well, you'll also remember that the 21 to 22% never actually happened. It was pegged in the recession at 21%, and now it's going to drop back very slightly to 20%. So that's got to be good news. There's something else too in this, and there's a hint that the government will be reviewing small business taxation. There was another announcement, not particularly widely clear in the budget, that the government would be looking at the IR35 legislation with a view to accepting, I guess, that that just isn't working very well. The amount of money it produces is negligible. The amount of work it makes for advisors is absolutely huge. And the uncertainty for taxpayers is huge too. So I think that review is going to be quite good. But I have just an ominous sensation down my backbone that that's also going to include the whole business of the inequality between trading as a company and trading as a sole trader. I think we've all accepted that that's an inequality that cannot last, and something needs to be done about that. So this budget is, there's at least a hint that that is going to happen. Let's have a look now at capital allowances. And I'm sad to say that there's some bad news for businesses investing in plant and machinery. The writing down allowances are to be reduced. They're to be reduced from 20% to 18% on the main rate pool, that's the classic plant and machinery pool, and from 10% to 8% in the special rate pool. Now, that's a little way off. That's due to happen in April 2012. So I guess it means that if people are going to invest in business, in capital items, they better do it sooner rather than later. And that's especially poignant because the AIA, which, if you remember, has doubled in 2010 from £50,000 per annum to £100,000 per annum, is actually going to significantly reduce from £100,000 to £25,000, again from April 2012. And that's a whopping reduction of £75,000. Now, I guess that is going to have an impact on a lot of companies, although I suspect that some, at least some AAT businesses, aren't going to be dramatically affected by that, but others clearly will. It's also worth mentioning, in terms of allowances, that the 100% first-year allowance on zero-emission good vehicles from April 2010 will be kept. There are some restrictions. This 100% allowance is not available in agriculture or fisheries, and oddly, not for waste management vehicles either. So generally speaking, the capital allowance news is not good for businesses, and I think most businesses are going to be affected by that. I'd now like to deal with the CGT provisions in the emergency budget. As widely expected, George Osborne raised the CGT rates. And importantly, he recoupled gains to income. And these changes apply to gains arising on or after the 23rd of June. So they are immediate changes to the system. We're not waiting until April. So how is this all going to work? Well, if you've got an individual who's got total taxable income and gains, that's after all the allowable deductions, and they are less than the basic rate, higher rate boundary, and remember that's £37,400 for the current year, then the rate of CGT will remain at 18%. So in theory, at least, that looks just like it used to before the CGT regime was decoupled in 2008. So it's back to the old and perhaps rather familiar rules. But any gain or part of a gain that's above that magic £37,400 will be taxed at the new rate of 28%. Now, that's quite a lot lower than some of the lamentations that were coming out that CGT would be raised to 40 and even 50%. So George has smart-footed the doomsayers on that particular point. And although I'll deal with it in a second, I think it's worth saying now that the Entrepreneurs Relief will keep CGT on qualifying gains at 10%, so good news there for entrepreneurs. So, if you had a gain in the current tax year, but before the 23rd of June, then the old rules will apply, and these will not be taken into account in determining the rate of CGT on gains that arise on or after the 23rd of June. So the 2011 tax year is in two distinctive parts, each with its own rules. Now, what I'd like to try and do here is to sort of give you a rough flavour of how that's going to work. Let's assume that we've got somebody who is earning, and I'm going to choose this number quite carefully here, £27,400 of taxable income. So I've got a precise £10,000 gap between the top of his income and the beginning of the higher rate band, I'm just choosing numbers for simplicity here. And let's also assume that that person had two gains in the current tax year. The first gain of £15,000 before June, and the second gain of £25,000 after June. Now remember that the first gain before June, £15,000, is dealt with under the old rules. It's decoupled from income and it will be taxed at a flat 18%. The second gain of £25,000 is going to be recoupled to income. So after we've played around with the annual exempt amount, we need to pop that on top of the income column. Now, before we do that, I just want to focus on the annual exempt amount, £10,100, of course, in the current tax year. Now, it would appear that you can use that how you will. So you could use that either against the first gain in my example or the second gain. Now, clearly, it's a no-brainer where you are recoupling gains to income to use your £10,100 against the second gain. Let's round that down to £10,000 just to make the example simple. So remember, we've got a £15,000 gain before June and a £25,000 gain after June. So it makes sense to use the annual exemption. Let's call it £10,000 against the second gain. So that's going to reduce that to £15,000. So you take the £15,000 on your second gain, and you pop that on the top of your income, just like you used to before April 2008. So we've now got a £15,000 brick above our £27,400. Now, given that we've got £10,000 of that before we hit the higher rate boundary, the result appears to be quite simple. That £10,000 is taxed at 18, and the balance of £5,000 will be taxed at 28%. That's the second gain dealt with. And the first gain, £15,000, that, remember, is decoupled. We've already used our annual exemption, so all of that will be taxed at 18%. So there you go. I'm going to do a separate vodcast, that's a voiceover deck cast, to look at some of these examples. And I'll do that separately from this podcast, so there'll be a little bit more detail on some of the issues here that I've dealt with in this podcast. But let's move on to Entrepreneurs Relief. Entrepreneurs Relief, of course, gives taxpayers an effective CGT rate on their qualifying disposals of 10%. And that's going to remain after the changes announced in the emergency budget. Now, mechanically, historically, we've always achieved this 10% in a rather bizarre way by reducing gains by 4/9 and then taxing the remaining 5/9 at the normal old rate of 18%. But the changes to the CGT rates from June 2010 would mean that the 4/9 reduction would no longer achieve the effective rate of 10%. So there's going to be a little bit of elementary maths needed there, which the government will deal with quite shortly, and I'm sure the rest of us will as well, to make sure that we do achieve the effective rate of 10%. So that's a bit of mechanics. But the other news is that the lifetime limit of £2 million announced by Alistair Darling will now be raised to £5 million, that's a lifetime allowance, remember, from the 23rd of June. Now, that's obviously good news for entrepreneurs, although many of the clients that our members will be acting for will probably be unaffected by this, although clearly there will be some. Now, how does that actually work? Supposing, for example, we'd already got somebody who'd made gains above the previous £2 million limit. And remember, actually, that was £1 million before April 2010. Well, the way it works is that you're going to get no additional relief for any excess above the old limit. So if you'd made gains of £4 or £5 million before, or say £4 million before June 2010, and you were capped at two, you've still got two there. You can't, as it were, retrospectively claim to have that brought into account. So if you do make further qualifying gains on or after the 23rd of June, you can claim the excess up to the new £5 million limit. So that's quite good news. Now, there are some transitional rules there, as you would expect, and we've dealt with those. I may deal with this whole issue again in the next tax update series or in podcasts a little later in the year. But I think that's sort of given us a basic picture of what's going on in CGT. And I think my overall view is that it's nowhere near as bad as it was expected to be. And for most basic rate taxpayers, of course, they're going to be all right. No change there. And I think it's worth also recalling to mind that most people don't use anything like their £10,100 in any event. So I suspect for a lot of people, it's not really going to be a problem. It would be, of course, and always has been a problem for serial entrepreneurs, and we do, of course, act for a few of those. Okay, that's as much as I'm going to say about CGT. Let's move on to another area. Now let's have a look at some VAT measures. Obviously, the real headline grabber in the emergency budget was the proposal to change the standard rate from 17.5% to 20%, but not until the 4th of January 2011. And that, of course, is quite cunningly selected because it protects Christmas shopping on the high street, and both punters and the high street feel the benefit of that, though not, of course, for the January sales. Perhaps they'll be advanced into December. And that's the only change to the rates and the scope of VAT. So all of the zero rates, the exemptions and the reduced rates are not affected by this change. Now, as you'd expect, there are some anti-forestalling measures in there, which is just a very posh way of saying that we don't want, we being HMRC, we don't want people to try and pop things into 17.5 when they should probably be in the 20%. But as far as I can see, having looked at these anti-forestalling measures, they are unlikely to apply to normal commercial practice. It's only when you're deliberately trying to manipulate them and overstretch the rules that the anti-forestalling measures come in. So if you normally take deposits before a job, then that, as far as I can see, is not going to be affected. Okay, that's the first point. And I think it's worth saying that that move was widely expected, and indeed from Danny Alexander, the Treasury Minister, a statement that this was unavoidable. Predictably, of course, the Lib Dems are not very happy with this move, but it does make firm sense from the government coffers' point of view. And it's predicted that this change will raise a whopping £50 billion over the next 5 years. And if you think that VAT going up from 17.5 to 20 is pretty draconian, I think it's worth pointing out that compared to other member states, the other 26 making 27 in total, the rates in the UK are not that high. Hungary, for example, springs to mind. That's got a standard rate of 25%. And France, I think, is 19.6. So all in all, the UK's new rate of 20% doesn't look that unreasonable. Okay, that's the headline rate. But of course, that has knock-on effects, doesn't it? As a result of these changes, the flat rate scheme, which an awful lot of AAT businesses that we're acting for will be on, that has to be amended. The details of these changes can be seen in Budget Notice 45. So in what way does the change from 17.5% to 20% affect the flat rate scheme? Well, the first thing, of course, is that it recalculates the percentages used to reflect that change. And we've got a new table that's been produced. And the ranges, as far as I can see, are between 4% and 14.5%. The 4% is for retailing food, confectionery, tobacco, newspapers, children's clothing, right up to what we do, which is accountancy and bookkeeping services at 14.5%. As you will recall, the VAT flat rate scheme was actually introduced back in 2002, and its aim was to simplify VAT businesses with small turnovers, that is up to £150,000. Now, that £150,000 is not going to be changed, but currently you have to leave the scheme if your tax-inclusive annual turnover exceeds £225,000. And as a result of the increase in the standard rate of VAT to 20%, this exit threshold is going to be increased to £230,000 to get the same effect. The last bit of VAT that I'd just like to spend a moment or two on are the new penalty regimes that are coming in to hit taxpayers who don't file their VAT returns on time or pay their VAT liabilities in full and on time. Now, this was something that was in the original FA 2010, or should I say Finance Bill 2010, but it was dropped in the wash-up when Parliament was dissolved before the general election, and as a result of that, it has been put back in. So it's basically slightly old bit of news, but sort of reformatted, and you can see that in Budget Notice 37. So it's dividing it into two bits. It's effectively a reform of the penalty regime for late filing of returns and late payment of tax. And although we're only interested here in the VAT, it does apply to IPT, green taxes and excise duties as well. So what have we got then? We've got a sort of a variety of penalties, and it's going to knock it into two: late filing of the return itself and late payment of the tax. And very crudely, for a penalty for late filing, for example, quarterly VAT return, if it's a day late, there's going to be an immediate £100 penalty that's after the due date for filing, and that's independent of whether the tax has been paid. And that failure also sets up a penalty period of 1 year. And if there are further failures within that 1 year, then the fixed penalty escalates by £100 for each of these subsequent failures, up to a maximum of £400. So that doesn't look actually very nice. So it does mean that some of our clients that have got used to just sort of popping the return in probably on the day and a bit of tax here and a bit of tax there, and we do, of course, see those, they are going to be hit by this new penalty regime. And the penalties for late payments are something like this. When the taxpayer first pays late, there's no penalty, but that sets up another penalty period set for 1 year, and any further failures in respect of late payment within that year will attract a penalty of 2% of the unpaid tax. And then that goes up. As if there's a third failure, that goes up to 3%, and then finally up to 4%. And you've got the same basic shape for monthly returns as well. Although, of course, the reason that most people go onto monthly VAT returns is because they are repayment traders, larger farmers, exporters and so forth, and they're looking to have their money back more quickly. So there you go. There's a review of the VAT measures in the budget, and hopefully that'll be of some use. Okay, the last section of this podcast just covers a few miscellaneous issues. The first is a revisiting of the individual savings account limits. That's the ISA limit from 2011. You may recall that in the first finance bill, there was a proposal to index link these from April 2011, and that was a measure that got dropped in the parliamentary wash-up. That has now been reinstated, so we're back where we were in March, April of 2010. So a little bit of good news for savers there. That's the first point. The second one that I'd just like to put before us is the rules in respect of purchasing annuities for pensions. You may recall that the current rules require somebody who has got a pension fund building up to take an annuity by their 75th birthday. Now, the government has announced that it's going to end that requirement to buy a fund by age 75 with effect from 2011-12, whereby which they have to either buy an annuity or otherwise secure, that's the alternative securing, of a pension income. So that's quite good news there for people who in any event, are going to have to be working for a lot longer, and putting off the day by which you can actually take a pension is obviously good news, because the annuity rates then increase quite quickly. Right, that's the second point. The bank levy, of course, widely predicted bank levy, is indeed coming in, and the UK has decided to just do a European thing with France and Germany. And they've all confirmed their intention to introduce a levy on banks and indeed building societies, as well as foreign banks operating in the UK. At the moment, that's expected to be a balance sheet levy, and it's also expected to raise something over £2 billion per annum. So that's obviously not going to be great news for the banks, and their share price dipped very slightly on the morning of the 23rd of June, but I expect that they'll cope with that. Okay, another point that I think might be of interest to AAT members, the Business Payment Support Service, otherwise known as the Time to Pay, that's going to remain in place for the foreseeable future. Okay, and on that point, I think we've now got to the end of my general review of the budget provisions for the 22nd of June. I'll be doing a separate vodcast covering some more detail on one or two of those areas, probably the CGT changes and the business tax provisions, which I think will largely be of interest to AAT members. So I look forward to seeing you then. Hopefully this has been of some use, and I'll talk to you soon. Cheerio.